The temperature at 1 p.m. that day was minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit, i.e. 55 degrees of frost. The men camped abreast of Corner Camp, where they had been on February 1st, on the evening of March 19th. The next day, after being delayed for some hours by bad weather, they turned towards Castle Rock and proceeded across the disturbed area where the barrier impinges upon the land. Joyce put his foot through the snow covering of a fairly large crevasse, and the course had to be changed to avoid this danger. The march for the day was only 2 miles, 900 yards. McIntosh felt that the pace was too slow, but was unable to quicken it owing to the bad surfaces. The food had been cut down to close upon half rations, and at this reduced rate the supplies still in hand would be finished in 2 days. The party covered 7 miles, 570 yards, on the 21st, and the hoosh that night was no thicker than tea. "The first thought this morning was that we must do a good march," wrote McIntosh on March 22nd. "Once we can get to safety camp, at the junction of the barrier with the sea ice, we are right. Of course we can, as a last resort, abandon the sledge and take a run into Hut Point, about 22 miles away. We have managed quite a respectable forenoon march. The surface was hard, so we took full advantage of it. With our low food, the cold is penetrating. We had lunch at 1 p.m., and then had left over one meal at full rations and a small quantity of biscuits. The temperature at lunchtime was minus 6 degrees Fahrenheit. Erebus is emitting large volumes of smoke travelling in a southeasterly direction, and a red glare is also discernible. After lunch, we again accomplished a good march, the wind favouring us for 2 hours. We are anxiously looking out for safety camp. The distance for the day was 8 miles, 1,525 yards. March 23, 1915. No sooner had we camped last night than a blizzard with drift came on and has continued ever since. This morning finds us prisoners. The drift is lashing into the sides of the tent and everything outside is obscured. This weather is rather alarming, for if it continues we are in a bad way. We have just made a meal of cocoa mixed with biscuit crumbs. This has warmed us up a little, but on empty stomachs the cold is penetrating. The weather cleared in the afternoon, but too late for the men to move that day. They made a start at 7 a.m. on the 24th after a meal of cocoa and biscuit crumbs. We have some biscuit crumbs in the bag, and that is all. Our start was made under most bitter circumstances, all of us being attacked by frostbites. It was an effort to bare hands for an instant. After much rubbing and bringing back of extremities, we started. Wild is a mass of bites, and we are all in a bad way. We plugged on, but warmth would not come into our bodies. We had been pulling about 2 hours when Joyce's smart eyes picked up a flag. We shoved on for all we were worth, and as we got closer, sure enough, the cases of provisions loomed up. Then what feeds we promised to give ourselves. It was not long before we were putting our gastronomic capabilities to the test. Pemmican was brought down from the depot with oatmeal to thicken it, as well as sugar. While Wilde was getting the primus lighted, he called out to us that he believed his ear had gone. This was the last piece of his face left whole, nose, cheeks and neck all having bites. I went into the tent and had a look. The ear was a pale green. I quickly put the palm of my hand to it and brought it round. Then his fingers went, and to stop this and bring back the circulation, he put them over the lighted primus, a terrible thing to do. As a result, he was in agony. His ear was brought round all right, and soon the hot hoosh sent warmth tingling through us. We felt like new beings. We simply ate till we were full, mug after mug. After we had been well satisfied, we replaced the cases we had pulled down from the depot and proceeded towards the gap. Just before leaving, Joyce discovered a note left by Spencer Smith and Richards. This told us that both the other parties had returned to the hut and apparently all was well. So that is good. When we got to the barrier edge, we found the ice cliff onto the newly formed sea ice not safe enough to bear us. So we had to make a detour along the barrier edge and, if the sea ice was not negotiable, find a way up by Castle Rock. At 7 p.m., not having found any suitable place to descend to the sea ice, we camped. Tonight we have the primus going and warming our frozen selves. I hope to make Hut Point tomorrow. McIntosh and his companions broke camp on the morning of March 25th, with the thermometer recording 55 degrees of frost, and, after another futile search for a way down the ice cliff to the sea ice, they proceeded towards Castle Rock. While in this course, they picked up sledge tracks, and following these, they found a route down to the sea ice. McIntosh decided to depot the sledge on top of a well-marked undulation and proceed without gear. A short time later, the three men, after a scramble over the cliffs of Hut Point, reached the door of the hut. We shouted, no sound. Shouted again, and presently a dark object appeared. This turned out to be Cope, who was by himself. The other members of the party had gone out to fetch the gear off their sledge, which they also had left. Cope had been laid up, so did not go with them. We soon were telling each other's adventures, and we heard then how the ship had called here on March 11th and picked up Spencer Smith, Richards, Ninnis, Hook and Gaze, the present members here being Cope, Hayward and Jack. A meal was soon prepared. We found here even a blubber fire, luxurious, but what a state of dirt and grease. However, warmth and food are at present our principal objects. While we were having our meal, Jack and Hayward appeared. Late in the evening, we turned into dry bags. As there are only three bags here, we take it in turns to use them. Our party have the privilege. I got a letter here from Stenhouse giving a summary of his doings since we left him. The ship's party also have not had a rosy time. McIntosh learned here that Spencer Smith, Jack, and Gaze, who had turned back on February 10th, had reached Hut Point without difficulty. The third party, headed by Cope, had also been out on the barrier, but had not done much. This party had attempted to use the motor tractor, but had failed to get effective service from the machine and had not proceeded far afield. The motor was now lying at Hut Point. Spencer Smith's party and Cope's party had both returned to Hut Point before the end of February. The six men now at Hut Point were cut off from the winter quarters of the expedition at Cape Evans by the open water of McMurdo Sound. McIntosh naturally was anxious to make the crossing and get in touch with the ship and the other members of the shore party. But he could not make a move until the sea ice became firm, and, as events occurred, he did not reach Cape Evans until the beginning of June. He went out with Cope and Hayward on March 29th to get his sledge and brought it as far as Pram Point, on the south side of Hut Point. He had to leave the sledge there owing to the condition of the sea ice. He and his companions lived an uneventful life under primitive conditions at the hut. The weather was bad, and though the temperatures recorded were low, the young sea ice continually broke away. The blubber stove in use at the hut seemed to have produced soot and grease in the usual large quantities, and the men and their clothing suffered accordingly. The whites of their eyes contrasted vividly with the dense blackness of their skins. Wild and Joyce had a great deal of trouble with their frostbites. Joyce had both feet blistered, his knees were swollen, and his hands also were blistered. Jack devised some blubber lamps, which produced an uncertain light and much additional smoke. McIntosh records that the members of the party were contented enough, but unspeakably dirty, and he writes longingly of baths and clean clothing. The store of seal blubber ran low early in April, and all hands kept a sharp lookout for seals. On April 15th, several seals were seen and killed. The operations of killing and skinning made worse the greasy and blackened clothes of the men. It is to be regretted that though there was a good deal of literature available, especially on this particular district, the leaders of the various parties had not taken advantage of it, and so supplemented their knowledge. Joyce and McIntosh, of course, had had previous Antarctic experience, but it was open to all to have carefully studied the detailed instructions published in the books of the three last expeditions in this quarter.